This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Come get some. Beware, IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me today is Greg Miller.
Hi.
Sam Claiborne.
What's up, everybody?
And Justin Davis. Scoop. Lots to talk about today. We're going to talk about Elder Scrolls Online. We're going to talk about this strange new Vita game that's being censored. But first, everybody is talking about whether or not Nintendo should put their games on iOS and Android on mobile. For their part, Nintendo has said they have no plans to do that, although they have admitted, you know, in light of recent news where they're way, way missing their sales targets, they are considering new business structures. Lots of people think that this is what Nintendo needs to do in order to survive in the short term, just put their games on iOS. They'll make a quick buck really fast. Some other people think that's a terrible idea. It's time for GameScoop.
Ah, finally.
To weigh in on this.
Let's solve it, guys.
First, the quote from Nintendo President Satoru Iwata is that the spread of smart devices does not spell the end of game consoles. It's not that simple. It doesn't mean that we should put Mario on smartphones. Sam, what do you think?
Well, two things. Mm-hmm. One is that I don't think Nintendo needs money. They need to have a profitable business.
Now, yeah.
They still got a lot of money in the bank.
Right, so they don't need to make a quick buck. Which is totally, they just don't need to do that.
I looked it up. They have $11 billion in the bank.
Yeah, which is even more
almost
yen.
Like you, dude.
That's almost as much as I have in my bank.
Even more yen.
But the other thing is that I want good Nintendo games, right? I don't want bad Nintendo games ever. And there happens to be a lot of really good Nintendo games on 3DS right now. Mm-hmm. All of them, but there's nothing on iOS that's as good as, you know, the best 3DS game. By any measure, I don't think. And so I think that they're doing just fine making awesome games in 3DS. I want them to make more awesome games. I don't think they're going to be able to do that on iOS, even if they could make money off of it. So it's kind of a non-issue for me.
But now, like, what about certain games like Fire Emblem?
Mm-hmm.
You don't think that would work very well?
I think it would work, but it works so well on the 3DS already.
Sure.
I don't really see, you know.
Well, but then you're just talking about, like, why not bring the game to more platforms?
Yeah, right? I mean, yes. I can see your point for games like that. But you know, it's and I hate to use the term, it's a slippery slope. I just don't want to see Mario on a touch screen.
I know what you mean, but this actually just gave,
doing a visual
just gave me an idea. If Nintendo did want to do this, I'm just saying.
He's drawing an M, now he's drawing an R, and you know, an A, and then an R.
I see what he's
Mario.
Doing.
Does this show up on camera?
Mario.
Yeah, there you go. I'm just saying, Nintendo, this is a free one. You can use
it. I mean, here's the thing. We've talked about this a lot over the years. I remember old Hillary Goldstein GameScoops.
Who?
He was this girl. This thing that he talked about.
Yeah.
Anyways, they would say that if Nintendo, when profits were so down, when the money was gone from the bank, that's when they would need a quick buck, and they'd be like, screw it, all NES games or whatever, five NES games are going to iOS and all these things. I don't think this is, you know, the problem with the Wii U numbers and all these other things, I don't think that this is the time to fire that immediately. You know what I mean? I don't think they're to the point. It seems to me like the iOS thing is totally, well, we need money. We are screwed. We are in a lot of trouble. Right now they're like, well, we missed our marks and that sucks, but we'll come back.
Yeah, it's the Sega position where Sega was struggling as a company. Mm-hmm. They had to get out of the console business to stay being a company. And you know what? Their game suffered from that.
100%.
Until you see it. Now, conversely, I think Fire Emblem would be really good.
Now Sega has so many amazing games.
Well, yeah, that's the problem, right? Is that people say the console and the games are developed together, mm-hmm. and so they become an inseparable package. But, you know, to your point about Fire Emblem working on iOS, it totally would. You know, it would be good. I think that you could also, anybody could make a knockoff Fire Emblem game and do an iOS. I don't know why you don't do that.
I just think there are certain games.
There's a bunch of good strategy games.
There's
nothing to that level.
Not like that.
You know, people say, you know, the Nintendo games, the platformers are all about the great controls, you know, and that way, you know, the controls are terrible on touchscreen platforms like iOS and iPad. But like games that don't require turn-based games like Fire Emblem, right. Even like a Pikmin.
Like the number of Nintendo franchises that would work great on an iPad is so high, or an iPhone. Like Animal Crossing would be awesome. Mm-hmm. Advance Wars and Fire Emblem would be awesome.
Yes, Advance Wars.
Pikmin would be awesome.
So this
Pokemon would be really
Nintendo
good.
Nintendo made two touchscreen Zelda games, and at the time, people praised Nintendo for that. For like, they thought that worked well.
So this is the cool conversation about this, is that some games would benefit for being on iOS. That's the conversation that I'm interested in. I'm not interested in what's going to save Nintendo's business.
So let's
that's what the conversation is right now. Like, oh, Nintendo has to get out of consoles. They've totally failed, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
They need to be this company, this, that company. You don't know what company they need to be. Only Satoru Iwata is going to make that decision. He's kind of crazy. That company's never made decisions that we can predict. They just made a 2DS. Like, if you guys want to see, if you want to see cool games on like Nintendo games on iOS, then like that's something that's really interesting. I think you guys have great ideas about that. So that's what I can get behind.
So I mean, here's some facts about all the Chicken Littles running around saying that Nintendo is doomed need to know. And I have said that Nintendo's in big trouble, and I'm gonna reconcile that with what I'm about to say in a little bit. So Nintendo,
so settle in.
This is a lecture.
Nintendo. I looked some stuff up before GameScoop. Nintendo right now, they're worth $19 billion. That's what the company is worth. That's more than EA and Activision put together. So they're a bigger video game company in terms of what their stock's worth than EA and Activision. They have $11 billion in cash in the bank that they're just sitting on that they can use for whatever they need.
They're the third biggest company in Japan, period.
Yeah, they're bigger than Sony. They go back and forth. I think right now as we speak, they're bigger than Sony. So if you subtract that cash that they have from what they're worth, that basically means the market's saying Nintendo, all of their hardware business, all of their software business, all their brands, they have some of the biggest, best, most reliable brands in Zelda. Mario is up there with Disney. That's worth about $8 billion. Like, that's not very much. Like, I think Nintendo's cheap. Like, I think if you're buying stock, like, the upside there is tremendous. Like, yes, the Wii U is in big trouble, and I don't really know how Nintendo comes back from that, because it's not enough to just say, okay, we really fucked up with the Wii U. Like, what you do after that suddenly starts in, like, such a pit. Like, that's why the Dreamcast had so much trouble, is because the Sega Saturn did so poorly. Like, if they're not super careful, it can start this downward spiral that hurts their hardware business. But Nintendo is a company that makes games that we love. You know, you're loving your Wii U, you're loving 3D World and NES Remix, and I'm loving my 3DS. I loved everything that they did last year. That company is not in any kind of imminent danger that they need to make big changes. Like, they're fine.
But I'd like to see Nintendo games, you know, be improved by iOS, like menu choosing and stuff like that. I'd also like to see Wii U games or Nintendo's franchises on next-gen,
Super
consoles. Thing, right?
I'd love to see Zelda look like, what was that game that came out, that was announced yesterday, that fantasy game with the open world? Kingdom something Deliverance.
Yeah.
Mm. It's an amazing, well, basically all these two Skyrim and set as an example. Like, a giant, you know, explorable open world was not possible on the Wii. It might be possible on the Wii U, but that's what I want Zelda to be. I don't want it to be restricted like I think it was when Skyward Sword came out. Mm. And like Metroid Other M, that's not the best example of what a Metroid game should be. Arkham City is. Mm-hmm. So like, that's what, you know, I feel like sometimes Nintendo's hardware is holding games back. And even though they're designed in tandem to work together, and it's probably good for the company for them to have a console, I want, you know, the designers at Nintendo, the game developers, to be set free to make the coolest, most cutting-edge games possible.
See, that to me is the most exciting thing, and why I thought it was weird that the smartphone business came up again, right? Because I feel like that was an argument we left behind so long ago, like in the Hillary Clinton era that we were still talking about. Now it would be way more exciting for Nintendo to be like, the Wii U is a failure. We're pulling out. We are going to make software for these things, and we'll keep making 3DS hardware. But then it comes down to how much.
That's exactly where I am at. I mean, right? I could live with that, and like, who? I don't know what the quality effect that would have on games. It might have negative quality effects on games, but like the Wii had negative quality effects on games. It kept games back.
Right.
Like, I think the Wii U is going to have the same problems. I want the cutting edge, amazing Nintendo games that we once had.
Do you think, I mean, my concern, Nintendo's done a great job for decades of existing in this sort of other space. There's all these game companies and then Nintendo is sort of off on their own, doing their own thing, selling their own hardware and software. And so if we saw games like Zelda and Metroid on the PlayStation 4, then suddenly they're competing against this whole other games that like they're almost not even mentioned in like the same breath. They're considered in the same way. Like, do you think they would feel as special? Like, I feel like that's part of what happened to Sega. Well, Sega's quality dropped first and foremost, but like that would be my big concern with Nintendo. You know, it's like, oh, they make such great software. Why don't they just become a software-only company? Like, it's more complicated than that. It's more complex than that.
Yeah, to use the Batman example, like Batman's huge. You can make a terrible Batman game now, but you can also make an amazing, well-thought-out Batman game on every console, like these new Batman games have been, and they're just fantastic. And if Nintendo's not capable of doing that, then like I question their abilities as developers in the first place. If you can't take somebody else's hardware and just be that's really powerful and make an amazing 3D Mario game, then you know what's stopping you from doing that? You should be able to do that.
I mean, they're just now making HD games, and they look incredible. I think Mario 3D World looks incredible, even Wind Waker HD does. But I mean, they're not going to come out. They're not going to make another console now, right? Like, I just can't. They're not going to invest all that money in like create a console that's going to compete with PS4 and Xbox One right now. So it's like, what's the option? Are they going to make games for the Steam machine, for the Steam Box? Like, what do they do?
They're in a tight spot. I do think, you know, they're a company that's proven their willingness and ability to reinvent themselves, you know, both with the Wii and even in the big picture. Like, they were not a video game company longer than they were. So they could be, in another 50 years, they could be a toy maker. Like, we don't know. They could be something totally different. So I don't doubt their resilience and Nintendo's ability, you know, to survive.
They're resilient, but they're also resistant to change. They get dead set on things, and then they take a long time to adapt. So right now, we're getting that with the eShop. Mm-hmm. It's not a good place to discover a huge library of amazing Nintendo games for cheap. The games are too expensive. There's not enough of them. It kind of stinks to just navigate. Like, that could have been sorted out 10 years ago, but they only really decided they have a need for that now, and now they're really pushing it hard, but you know, that's something that they missed the boat on, but hey, they've done that before. They just need to catch up.
I do. I mean, this is an issue where I'm truly on the fence, and you know, one little nudge could knock me on one side or the other. Like, you know, because we listed off all these Nintendo franchises that would be fantastic on touchscreens, and so many more franchises that I would love to play on a PlayStation or an Xbox. But I am very concerned that A, they would lose their Nintendo magic, you know, in that transition. And B, I just don't know from, you know, a business sense, a money sense, like I was saying, I don't know that they feel the same urgency that some people think they should.
What hurts is to see them.
I don't think there's urgency to it. That's what it all comes down to. Yep. I don't think they're to the point where they're like, we have to do something. Right now it is, how do we solve this Wii U problem? And then maybe later becomes, we have to do something. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying what hurts is to see games lose their Nintendo magic on a Nintendo console. Mm-hmm. And when you see Other M flounder, and when you see Skyward Sword, which I personally didn't think was good, but a lot of people do like it. Or, you know, the infinite amount of Yoshi's Island and Kirby games that come out. Like, I just don't... They have that same problem already. The Nintendo magic can also be lost if they just don't do certain innovations or make good games. So it's like, you know, maybe it wouldn't be that bad to see that Nintendo magic be lost just because it's on PlayStation. And it's still a good game.
They're at a crossroads where they can either become Sega or they can become Disney. And not that those are the two extremes, like they could easily go somewhere in the middle, but if they do the right thing and, you know, and make really smart choices over the next few years and put out really high quality products, they could become, you know, NES Remix is an example of a game that really only appeals to adults. And maybe there's some kids out there that never played the NES that are loving it. That's basically a nostalgia trip, which is fine. You know, I'm 28, I love it.
Right.
But they also have stuff that appeals to young kids, and Mario games are friendlier than ever and easier to get into. So if they really sort of think this through and do the right thing, they could become you know, a Disney that has ABC Family and has all these cartoons, but also has ESPN and Pirates of the Caribbean and, right, you know, this breadth of content. Or they could kind of become a Sega and just become this weird sort of gaming afterthought.
I mean, to the point you're making, right, that I think for most of us, right, the reason you love Nintendo is nostalgia. And, you know, the years of, you know, playing Zelda, I'll never forget. You know, my first Zelda being a Sega kid was N64, and I stayed up till 3 in the morning the night before, or the day of, I guess, my ACTs playing it, whatever. But I thought it was interesting when I went to the PlayStation 4 event and I talked to Shuhei Yoshida about industry in general. We're talking on camera about Nintendo, and I was saying how I thought they had made some bad choices so far. And he brought up the fact that it's a concern for them because Nintendo is a gateway to console gaming, right? Like, Nintendo is this thing with kid-friendly games, and you bring them in, they play that way. And so when they do have put out a system that isn't selling well, and we do see children going to iPad, and that's what they imagine, you know, touch-based, everything is going to be games, that becomes them eroding the fan base in a way, right? In a way that kids are growing in a new tangent they're not that people don't know about, and then you figure even if they let the Wii U right now languish for another 3-4 years, then that's a generation of children who are playing games that aren't Nintendo and don't care about Mario.
Yeah. Or don't care, you know, they're more familiar with gaming on a touchscreen than gaming with a controller in their hand.
Yeah.
And that's already true of kids, you know, sure, in America as well.
Yeah. Yep.
Nintendo has an investor meeting coming up soon, is that right?
Yeah, at the very end of this month, the 30th, or is there 31 days in January?
Yeah, 31.
There are 31, yeah.
So it's right at the, it's very at the end of the month, and they're going to announce, you know, we don't know how sweeping the changes are going to be, but that's when we're going to hear more.
Interesting.
If we hear more, then obviously we'll continue watching Nintendo's fortunes very closely. Now, Elder Scrolls Online.
Can't wait.
It finally
are you being
like
serious?
I'm serious. I'm excited. I played it at PAX. Is that right? PAX. Well, it was the last one. I went and played it at PAX. I was a big fan. Very excited.
Was it in third person then?
It was both. I could jump back and forth.
I think it's still
because now it's first person. Like, it looks just like Skyrim when you play that way.
You can jump around and do both. Yeah.
I'm excited about it as well.
It's out April 4th.
It's coming up, man. Mm-hmm. On PC.
Is this coming to PC first? Consoles aren't the same day?
I don't know.
We don't know about that. Let's just say.
I thought it was day and date for everything.
I kind of thought so too.
I'll Google real quick.
Yeah, I will allow it.
Thank you.
Anyway, the ESRB rating was just announced. It received an M for mature, which wasn't a surprise to me, but apparently it was a surprise to Bethesda.
I cannot believe that this is a game. Bethesda is a really, really savvy company. You know, they're one of the most savvy companies in the industry. They've been working on this game for years, targeting a T rating, and then it comes back an M, and they say, oh, we're really surprised about this M rating. How does that happen? Like,
we had no idea. We've
like,
never
how
made
could
a
they
game.
Not know? How it's could like, they miss, like, it occasionally happens with movies where we were really targeting a PG-13, right, they gave us an R, and they make a few cuts, and, you know, they have some back and forth and get it down to PG-13.
I am correct.
You're correct.
PC, April.
Okay.
Jet consoles later on. I was afraid I was breaking some kind of embargo. I had to text Leah. I was like, wait.
Okay. It's rated M, even though they were expecting a T. But the last two Elder Scrolls games, Skyrim and Oblivion, were both rated M.
That's true. So it's not like this is some gigantic blow where, like, now all these kids that love Skyrim aren't going to be able to play this new one. Like, it's the same audience.
I know. Yeah. But I don't know. Like you say you're excited for it.
Right.
And I keep hearing from people who have played it that they are excited for it. But it is a game that you have to buy for $60 and then pay a $15 a month subscription
expensive.
Fee.
Right.
Like, it's a tough sell.
Sure.
I think I'm going to go out on a limb here. I think the subscription fee is going to make a comeback.
Mm. Really?
Yeah.
Just in general?
Well, because I think the pushback against free-to-play and freemium is going to get stronger, and people are going to figure out that they don't like the way that feels in a lot of games, and they would rather just pay and not have to think about money.
Yeah. People figure out that you get what you pay for.
Well, I mean, and I've written, and other people have a lot about free-to-play games. You just don't want to be thinking about money when you're playing a game. That's the bottom line.
You're thinking totally about free-to-play games that actually have quality stuff you can buy, as opposed to, like, the type of newer stuff, which, like, Dota, where you only buy cosmetic stuff.
Free-to-play, in and of itself, is not good nor bad, just like $60 isn't good nor bad. There's good examples of free-to-play and bad. There's $60 games that are fantastic and $60 games that are terrible.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, I think freemium and free-to-play is leaving a bad taste in the mouth of a lot.
It's weird to already be paying for PSN and Xbox Live.
Right.
And also...
That's the other thing, too. This is on top of your service.
Yeah, I don't buy into that either because it's like, oh, you don't factor in the cost of your TV. Like, you bought the TV, you bought the electricity. Like, everyone already has Xbox Live or PSN for the, you know, the services that it already provides.
When we get to this point, I will not be shocked when they say that you don't need PlayStation Plus for this. DC Universe Online is an online-only MMO. You do not need PlayStation Plus to play it.
Yeah. I thought they already said you did. Well, maybe they haven't announced Elder Scrolls because it's too far away, but there's several MMOs that do require the premium console service.
We'll see. But I wouldn't be surprised if it isn't there. And that's what it comes down to for me is that, you know, I'm not using DC in a joking sense like I normally do. I'm addicted to that MMO. I love that game and I play it all the time. And that's a free-to-play MMO. And the other day my subscription expired and I gave them the $125 they asked for Legendary. I was like, yep. Like, I don't, and I'm not going to play it every day. I'm not going to play it every month, I'm sure, this year. Yeah. But I want it there and I don't want to worry about, oh, crap, well, now I'm losing character slots and inventory slots and bank slots and this, that,
that's
and the other.
Worst.
Yeah, no, I'd rather... I'm fine. Yeah, this game looks awesome. I'm sure I get a free month with it the first month I buy it. So then I'm paying $15 for the second month, and then am I still playing it? Who knows? I'll cross that bridge when the time comes.
You have to figure out these, no joke, like these big, giant, elaborate spreadsheets to figure out what costs what and what to get a good deal. I'm really into Lord of the Rings Online, and I think that's a game that does do free-to-play, right? I really like that game's model, but I do need to look at this Google Doc to keep track of, like, okay, if I subscribe for 1 month, I get this stuff, and then I can buy this quest pack, and then that'll like that'll save me money in the long run. It's like, man, I would much rather just pay a fee every month.
Right.
The downside is that then you feel pressured to play.
Yeah,
that's the thing, to get your money's worth.
So now, what about the Old Republic? Star Wars is a much stronger brand, and it couldn't maintain a subscription model.
And it made more money when it went free to play. All the games make more money when they switch to free to play.
Yeah. I just don't, like, think Elder Scrolls is...
I think maybe it's because it's coming out on consoles and people just might not be used to that. I think it's going to attract a Skyrim audience, honestly.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, they should go for that, you know, and if they can get people to pay prices on
consoles. It wouldn't strike me as odd if they do the same thing DC did, which it was, hey, we are the exact same model, we get that number, we see the bump, and then when we see the drop, that's when we go, okay, it's free to play.
The drop. Just wait for the drop.
Like you do.
GameCube.
They'll probably be my favorite example. EVE Online does this, and I believe WildStar is doing this now, where it's a paid subscription fee. It's $10 or $15 a month, but then you can buy that subscription with in-game money from other players.
Or you can actually grind.
Yeah, you can grind the currency to play for free. Like, so let me give you an example.
If you're really good, you can keep playing the game for free.
Okay.
Because you can use in-game currency
or if
to
you
buy
are
a
addicted
subscription.
And
that definitely happens in WildStar.
And so let's say I don't have a lot of free time, and I really want in-game currency. I want this gold to just skip ahead. Instead of buying gold from the game service, like in a game like Guild Wars, you give gold to another player, and then they give you a month, another month of subscription.
Oh, okay. And they give it to you or they pay for
you buy it. Like, you buy it with in-game money from a player. And so it's like, that way you could keep playing for free. You could say, look, I have this 1,000 gold. I don't want to pay to play this game, so I'm going to give somebody 1,000 gold and they're going to give me a month of subscription fee. And then that player basically spent $15 to get the 1,000 gold.
Okay.
And that's what EVE Online does.
That's a good way to lock people in.
And so the reason the game developer doesn't care is because they still got their $15.
Yeah.
It's just they got it from one player, like, instead of two players. Like, it's a great model.
They also announced the voice cast today for Elder Scrolls Online.
A lot of names on it.
John Cleese is on there, Kate Beckinsale, Alfred Molina, Malcolm McDowell, and Linda Carter, which I thought was interesting. I don't know how much voice acting she does. Yeah, she's Wonder Woman. Yeah, from Hot Fuzz, Harry Potter, Pirates of the Caribbean. Yeah, so it's a impressive voice cast.
It's a big voice. It's a crazy voice cast for an MMO. That's what surprised me.
Dude, so many F-bombs to get that rating.
If this were Skyrim, I'd be like, oh yeah, you know, famous voices. But in an MMO, I don't know that the people in like Old Republic were that famous, for example.
Well, that was notable for its voice acting, though. They spent so much money, and it took so long. It's funny how this has become part of MMOs, is to have the voice acting.
I think that's kind of what killed Old Republic, is like that game's production values were so high and so through the roof that they couldn't keep a steady flow of content coming.
Yeah.
It was hard for them to make new stuff, and I hope Elder Scrolls doesn't, fall prey to that. I'm really, really excited about that game.
Yeah, I hope it pans out.
Elder Scrolls Online is out April 4th on PC. Consoles coming at a later date. Now, coming this spring to Vita is an exclusive game called Monster Monpiece.
Sounds like a cute monsters. Little fun game, Damon. Yeah. Why don't you tell me about it?
It is out in...
what the hell?
It's already out in Japan. It's been out in Japan for like a year.
Those characters are dressed a little racy, but I'm sure that's...
I'm sure it's just the cover art to entice you in.
This is nothing. This is absolutely nothing. This is rated lower than G compared to what's actually in the game. So the deal with this game is that it's a card battle game, but the cards are girls. They represent monster girls that you meet during your travels. It's also an RPG, and then you get their cards in your arsenal when you battle other people. And
it sounds like a lot of fun, Damon.
Yeah. So
you love card games. You're always playing that Magic.
So it's a Vita game. The Vita has a touchscreen, right?
Yes. This is confirmed.
Right. The cards level up. In order to level up the cards, you turn your Vita vertically, and then you get a big full-screen view of the card, and you rub your Vita. So you rub the image of the girl vigorously, basically until she levels up and some of her clothes pop off. And then I think the cards have three levels. Actually, I'll do the German one. They have three levels each card. And then they become increasingly, like the level three card is the most scantily clad.
Oh, okay.
This is the game that's been out in Japan for over a year. Monster Mumpies coming out here in the spring in Europe and the US.
There you go.
Jeez Louise.
But the game, yeah.
There's just a lot
this
of
is the part. Now, the,
ridiculous
the player,
jiggle.
The player is rubbing at this part.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Oh, and they're moving? Like, this is
the You'll game. Notice Physics? The bingo wings are not
Whoa,
flapping
what was that
the
seal?
Same way.
The seal's just really impressed with the game. So, but the thing is that there's been some controversy about this because the game is actually being censored. Like, this...
When it comes out in America, right?
This is the U.S. trailer.
Okay.
So this is what we'll get, but apparently there are 350 cards in the game. 40 of them have been censored, so we won't get the actual Japanese versions. 40 of those cards, when you level up to level 3, it'll just revert back to the level 1 art. So you're not going to see the level 3 art. It was deemed too racy for Western audiences.
You're really upset about this, aren't you, Dave?
I'm not upset about this. I'm just relaying the information.
Buddy.
Damn, touchy much?
Pun intended. Some people were upset about this. Now, the audience for a game like this, which includes me, is pretty small.
Yeah.
Right? This game is not going to...
It's a niche market.
This game is not going to do gangbusters.
Oh.
But I think it's interesting that the publisher that's bringing this over decided to just go ahead and censor the game beforehand.
Who's the publisher?
I don't want to.
Put you on the spot.
Yeah, I know. I cannot.
Isn't it more interesting that the publisher made this game in the first place?
I think it's Idea Factory. They're one of those publishers that bring over Japanese games.
I mean, we can talk about censorship, freedom of speech, but what jumps out to me about this is that the audience for this game is tiny, as Damon says, and they're the people that are going to be most upset about it being censored.
I mean, right?
They upset the only audience that's interested in the game to begin with. This game was never going to be a bestseller.
They're in a tough spot because. It's like a game like that could, there was an issue with Dragon's Crown, right when it came
Sorceress.
Out.
Sorceress.
Yeah, there's like, sexual imagery in that, and then it becomes a thing.
It's not that it's sexual so much as it's just like obnoxious depictions of
gratuitous,
women
chauvinistic,
So it's like,
ridiculous. I mean, like,
it could just bring the game over as is, and then the audience that's into that will buy it, and they like it, and that's done.
Right, but they did this, and I don't think the people who are excited for this game won't buy it now. Okay. But I do think we're talking about it on GameScoop, which we wouldn't have before, unless it would have been released, and then somebody would have been super mad about it, and then,
But it still has all the same problems. To Damon's point, it has all the same problems still, thematically.
Yeah.
And it has a little bit less skin. It's just such a stupid way to censor.
You still do the rubbing thing. Like, that's still part of the game.
So speaking of stupid censorship, also Bravely Default, same way. There in Bravely Default, which is coming out in a few weeks for DS, there is a bunch of characters with skimpy clothing. And they took that out. But it's funny because these characters are like
little chibi characters.
Yeah, they're chibi characters. They're not even like realistic or even big boob representations of characters. They're just a little bit more naked than usual.
Mm-hmm.
And so they clothed them a little bit, and then they changed the age of the characters in text from 15 to 17.
That's what's really funny to me about Bravely Default is like if you only need to change their age up, then maybe you need to look more closely at your character models, which I know they changed those too, but And also, 17 is still not legal in America, so I don't know what's the difference. Why is 15 morally bad, but 17? We're like, it's fine. 17's fine.
Localization is a very strange thing.
I think in the case of Bravely Default, like that's a game with a lot of broad appeal that looks like it's going to be a massive hit.
Broad appeal.
No pun intended. But that game, they want it to be another Final Fantasy. The game sounds like it's going to be great. We gave it a really positive review. They want that game to be a monstrous broad hit. Hit with the broads is what I'm getting at. This game, Monster Mumpies, is not that. So that's the difference between...
Anymore.
For me, I understand Bravely Default censorship, and I think Monster Mumpies' censorship is probably a mistake for them. I think they're frustrating and angering the only audience at that game.
Yeah, but if you now it can go one of a couple ways where it can be somebody's now if somebody's mad about the depiction of the females in the game, they'd be like, hey, we tried, we censored it to a degree we wanted to. Or they can go the opposite route and we've heard the fan feedback and the 40 cards are back in the game. Like,
you can rub their boobs again.
Rub them all.
Yeah, I mean, the rubbing is still in there, so it's like, I think people could still be offended by it, right? So it's like, 100%. Maybe it wasn't censored enough to avoid that, so then, like, what do they...
I mean, yeah, it's like basically throwing someone a bone, right? And the fact of, like, well, the gameplay is still rubbing. We can't do anything about that, but we can.
They said the gameplay isn't totally intact. They didn't change the gameplay. They're not, you know, removing any part of the gameplay. They just took out some 40 pieces of artwork from the highest level cards.
I mean, I think the game's gross. I don't think I've made that explicitly clear yet. I think that's a gross idea. I don't like it. I don't want it. But, like, I don't care that it exists. I'm not going to tell somebody what they can and can't publish and what they can and can't make. Like, make whatever you want, but, like...
Well, that's what I wonder. Like, part of me thinks, you know, I'm an adult. Can it just be up to me to decide whether or not this is appropriate for me?
Like, maybe it's just a really clever DLC strategy.
Yeah. That's it. I mean, they... Like, now people are going to be really interested. Yeah, I guarantee you, now people are going to be Googling these cards. What cards were left out of Monster Mompies, right? Like, now that's a thing. They created a thing.
Sure. Like, I don't have a problem. Like, if this is someone's bag and they want to buy it and someone else wants to, you know, build their business around making stuff like that, just own it. Just do it. Like, make that your business. Like, it's not for me. And if someone else wants to say, hey, here's why I'm offended by that, like, that's fine. I'm in favor of everybody. You know, you can make the gross stuff you want to make and someone else can talk about how they're offended by that and everyone's allowed to do what they want is sort of the stance that I take.
This is always the tightrope we walk when we talk about Japanese games being imported, right? It is a different culture and there is so...
Yeah.
Sex is treated so much differently over there.
Yeah.
It's not a real sentence.
So much differently.
It's very tired. It's been a long day. Please be excited for E3.
What did you see in Akihabara?
Dude, when you walk around there, I mean, like, this game's like nothing. Like... It's just anime girls with big boobs everywhere. Like, that's what it is. It's just what it is. And you actually get desensitized to it really fast. My girlfriend and I were there, and there's, you know, even she commented, just like, wow, we've seen a lot of boobs, and like, it doesn't even affect me anymore now. And like, just in a week, you know? So it is totally different. The official comment from the publisher is, Western society is not as lenient as that of Japan when sexual images are involved, especially images of humanoids that appear to be younger than a socially acceptable age. So I think some of these cards... Or, like, they look like really young, naked girls.
Right, when you, most...
Naked humanoids.
Humanoids, yeah.
Most humanoids drawn in the anime fashion look pretty young.
They say the borderline of what is acceptable will always be extremely gray and vary from person to person, but as a responsible company working in the U.S., we had to make the difficult decision that we did. I mean, they're in a tough spot.
Sure, yeah. So it sounds like they're trying to do the responsible thing and navigate that cultural line. Yeah, they're in a tight spot.
I like Carbella.
You could be arrested for having pictures of immature humanoids here.
I actually really like Carbella games, so I think it's better to get the game than not get it at all.
Right. So they're not actually humans, they're monsters.
Well, yeah, monster girls.
They're humanoid. What if they were like 51% monster and only 49% human?
Then it's okay, doesn't their age matter? Like,
so if it's like a wolf girl that has like ears but is still like a girl, then it's like, no, that's really bad. That's a young girl. But what if she was like more wolf?
Like with six boobs?
Yeah, I don't know. What if she had like, yeah, like...
I always want them to bring that game, the DS game where you wipe the sweat off the men.
Dual Love.
Yeah, I want that to come out over
I know,
there.
Right?
See, that's what we're talking about. There's no even playing field. These games get imported and it's just rubbing a girl and we're all like, well, that seems like a... Bring over the girl, the game where I rub a guy.
There was that game.
They were a little bit easier.
That's true.
Was it on Vita?
No.
No,
this is all
DS game.
Chase Nicole.
Original DS game.
No, developers not supporting the Vita once again.
Anyway, Monster Mompies is out this spring. I'm not sure if there's a release date yet, but that is a Vita exclusive.
Finally.
Check one on the board, huh?
So I hope stores are prepared. let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Andrew Gonzalez did.
Oh, good name.
He says, I was thinking the other day, Sony's PlayStation Plus offers the best incentive for gamers. The discounts are great. Who wouldn't want free games? Seeing as this is offered across all three Sony platforms, I couldn't help but be troubled about the Vita's take on it. I have learned from a few friends that own the device that they have not purchased a single Vita game since they bought the system because of PS Plus. Their general attitude is, I'll just wait until it appears on PS Plus. In an industry where publishers depend on day one and launch window sales, can this have a negative effect? I know Sony offers an incentive to publishers for putting games on PS Plus, but is it enough to make back development costs? Can this do more harm than good?
It could, but I don't think that's what you're looking at right now, right? Like, EA doesn't make Madden for Vita. Why? Because there aren't enough Vitas in the wild. If Sony can turn around at E3 and be like, guess what, we sold 20 million Vitas, developers will be like, oh, well, we should make more games for Vita. And that's when the tide would turn to where you if there's so many games coming out on Vita, they wouldn't all be free eventually. Right now, there's so few games coming out to Vita that you're like, well, that game will probably be free. Ollie, probably going to be free on for PlayStation Plus eventually.
This is an issue with PC games too, right? Like any,
but you should buy Ollie.
I'm saying any half-decent PC game is going to end up in a Humble Bundle, right? That you can get for...
Well, an indie game.
Right. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
What does your spreadsheet say?
I have no spreadsheet on this one. I do a lot of spreadsheets these days. I have a Hearthstone spreadsheet, too.
Nice.
I'm just not realizing this about myself. Lord of the Rings Online, Hearthstone. So we find... I don't know about Humble Bundles, but you find with stuff like Steam sales that companies are really, really resistant. Let's say you have a $10 game. They're really, really resistant to knock it down to $1. But what happens over and over and over again is once you go back up to $10, you sell way more because other people are playing it, they're telling their friends. Once the sale's over, the sales don't drop off a cliff. You'll sell more, like you'll sell more the day after your sale ends than, you know, any day you had over the last year.
Especially if you only raise it a few bucks, right? Like you drop it down to almost nothing and then you raise it to like half price, people are still gonna...
Well, sure, or even back up to full price. Like there's so many more people in the door that, you know, tweeting about it, Facebooking about it, presumably, you know. And I don't know, like I haven't talked to anybody about PlayStation Plus specifically. I would assume that's probably the same. Like Contrast was free when the PlayStation 4 launched. I would assume that that's they're selling more now as a result. But maybe
you
not.
Figure, I mean, it's the same thing. Eric Brudvig, former IGN guy, did a GDC talk last year, 2 years ago, about basically that a negative review is still better than no review at all. You want people talking about your stuff. Word of mouth is a big deal. So even like right now, if you didn't buy your PlayStation 4 and you're going to buy it in a year,
they're still selling millions of them.
When you go into the PlayStation store, you're going to see Contrast and be like, oh, right, that was free a long time ago. I've heard people talk about it. I've heard people play it. Maybe I'll try it. You know what I mean? And you jump in and try it.
That's the big problem for indie games is awareness.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's very, very hard to get, you know, IGN talking about your game, writing about your game. There's just too many. You're too small. Like, the niche is too small. It's a challenge. You know, a game like Don't Starve is another great example.
Yeah.
Although that's sold over a million copies, so that one's doing okay.
Sure, but I mean, it's how to get your indie game on people's radar is the big challenge, and giving it away or making it very, very cheap is one way to do that, and then you'll sell more after that giveaway ends.
Sure.
In answer to his question, like, I don't know whether it makes sense over the long term, but my speculation
been going
is
on for a while.
I mean, right now for the Vita, I think it makes a lot of sense. Get that? I mean, that they sell a Vita, you know, PlayStation Plus bundle, right?
Where it but comes that's a with benefit to Sony, not to the companies that are having their games given away.
I mean, you don't know that, right? You imagine Sony's made a deal with them.
They're getting money from Sony for that.
But I just mean, like, if the Vita sells more units, like you were saying earlier, as a result of this program being so strong.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I'd be curious to find out more if it helps Sony more than it helps the companies. Like, it makes the Sony platforms look really appealing, but what about the game makers?
Yeah. I mean, game makers don't make that huge of a cut from each game they sell. That's not really how that works.
That's
so
true.
Maybe they're actually getting a really good deal on that.
Yeah.
Maybe so. I'd like to look more into that.
Andrew, I would probably trust that Sony knows what they're doing. That they're not putting... If they were putting developers out of business, they would probably change up the PS Plus deal.
I'm actually... And maybe this is like my own ignorance, because I don't know, but like the financials of PS Plus... So they are paying a developer for each... Like, let's say someone downloads Contrast for free.
Yeah.
And Sony's giving them some dough for that, for each download?
I do not know.
I bet
specifics.
It's a set thing. Like, hey, we're going to do this. It'll be kind of equivalent to if you sold this many copies on PSN.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's ever
and
been
because then so PS
about.
Plus is $50 a year. You can get it discounted sometimes, but then so it's like, you know, then that comes out of Sony must know. So
everybody paying for PS Plus, they take that money and distribute it among several parties.
It's like
right?
you buying 50 99 cent games.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
That's more than I'd ever buy. On
that's maybe how I would think of it.
Yeah,
or $10, $5 games. I mean, there's enough to go around there for them to actually purchase the rights to do a free game as a promotion or something like that.
That's interesting. I'd be curious to find out more. Maybe I'll look into that.
I'll look into it.
This is Matt Jones.
Matt Jones?
This is a big deal. Jonesy. He says, I just read an article which said that the Tomb Raider Definitive Edition would be running at 1080p, 60 frames per second on PS4, but only 30 frames per second on Xbox One. brought me back to the whole discussion around the launch of the two consoles and how PS4 was 1080p on some games, while the Xbox One was only 900p, 720p. Even reminds me of when folks would compare PS3 and Xbox 360 multi-platforms to find the best version. My question, how big of a deal is this, really? Are these kinds of graphical differences going to have a large impact on whether or not to buy one console or the other? My thinking is that this comparative performance factor is pretty far down the list when making a console buying decision. I would figure price, controller, which console your friends own, cost of online, features, the library of games, would all be more important than whether or not a game is 1080p or 900p. I've always been a one console gamer, so I guess it never really mattered what the other console's versions looked like, but I wasn't ever given, because I wasn't ever going to play that version, but I'd really like to hear your opinions on this.
Sound like a smart guy, Matt Jones.
Matt Jones, super smart guy. I mean, it depends who you are. That's the long and short
of it. We would all buy three of each.
Yeah.
You got.
I don't want to open them all.
Yeah, you keep two sealed.
Yeah. One for the library, one for the collection.
I can tell you that the amount of time I spend worrying about whether or not the version I'm going to play is 60 frames per second or 30 frames per second is exactly zero.
Yeah. It's over the, this is same vein, so stick with me. Over the last month, I've been trying to get my Xbox Netflix to run better, right? And so Netflix finally contacted me for, this is Xbox One. Mm-hmm. Xbox One support told me how to do it. I had it running. I'm like, great, I tweeted a thank you at them. And somebody tweeted back, he's like, you do know that it they compress it twice on Xbox One, so it actually looks better on PlayStation platforms. And I'm like, you do know that my Xbox One is running my TV and on all the time, and I just want it to be easy. I don't care if Arrow looks a little bit more compressed here than there. I just want to watch it on the simple thing. Go, Xbox, Netflix, thanks, I'm done. Not plugging different inputs and doing all this stuff.
Sure. I think different people have different priorities. And if, frames and picture quality is incredibly important to you, that's fine. I respect that. If the feel of the controller is incredibly important to you, like, everyone needs to make their own decision how important that is.
Right.
The broader point of, like, the gap between the two consoles, I mean, we don't know. Like, we're finding more. They talked about it at launch games with Call of Duty. Now Tomb Raider is sort of another example that, hey man, maybe the Xbox is indeed going to be benchmarked quite a bit less powerful than the PlayStation 4. But that picture is going to continue to emerge over time.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's roughly the same as the Xbox PS2 divide at GameCube. I remember when Grand Theft Auto Vice City and 3 came out for Xbox, it was redone a little bit, it ran a little bit better. Yeah. I don't think more copies were sold, and I don't think anybody would say the Xbox is a better system than the PS2.
Everyone seems to...
had better resolution sometimes.
Everyone seems to accept and acknowledge that the PlayStation 4 is indeed, it has more raw power than the Xbox One. I mean, that seems to be, we're seeing it over and over again. But how that sort of manifests itself and whether developers will find a way to compensate, I don't know, we'll see. The PlayStation 3 was generally regarded to be more powerful than the Xbox 360 as well, but since it was harder to make games for, and the 360 was the lead SKU, the lead platform that a lot of companies made games for, often the PS3 version ran worse.
Right.
And so, I mean, I'm not giving the Xbox a pass. I'm really curious to see, that's a big difference if one's 60 FPS and one's 30.
Especially for a single player graphical remake of a game.
Yep.
The whole point, if you're going to get that game, if you've already played it, is to have a great looking single player game on presumably your contemporary setup. Because 1080p is not, it's not like it's, everybody should have 1080p pretty much by this point.
Yeah, I mean, we'll just have
to look better.
We'll just have to wait and see. It could be something that becomes a bigger deal 12 months from now, or it could be something that gap closes as developers learn to optimize for both consoles and becomes a smaller deal. But right now, I mean, anyone saying, "Oh, the two consoles are even," I mean, I think it's clear at this point that that's not.
But they're not drastically different, I don't think.
I mean, 60 FPS versus 30 is that's a big gap, and it might just be they couldn't lock the Xbox One at 60 and that it hovered, it was fluctuating, so they just decided to lock it at 30 and they knew they could achieve that. I mean, we don't know. I agree. Like you, it's not something that's important to me personally. I actually only have a 720p TV, so I'm more focused on the gameplay experience.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be an issue for Matt either, so I wouldn't spend too much time worrying about it. We do happen to be in an environment now where online gamers are very quick to argue about specs and defend their system. That's just kind of a thing that's happening now online.
Again?
Unfortunately. But you don't need to pay any attention to it. Don't pay them no mind. When is that definitive edition out? Isn't that soon?
Yeah.
Is that next week?
Even? Yeah.
Next
week? It's before the end of the month.
Yeah. Next week's the last.
So next week.
I'll be playing it on PS4.
You're going to play the whole... Do you think you're going to play the whole game again?
I think so, yeah.
I think I am too.
It's my favorite game of last year, so.
Yeah, mine too.
The only thing I'm playing on consoles right now are NES Remix and Wind Waker HD. Mm-hmm. So I can take a break from those. What are you guys playing right now?
DC Universe Online.
Yeah, still.
Yeah.
I'm playing Bravely Default.
Ooh. Is it good? You like it?
Yeah, I do like it. It's I can only play one JRPG a year, so
yeah.
I get too obsessive with grinding and stuff, so I'm a little disappointed that it's it's happening in January this year. Yeah. The rest of the year, I'm not.
It's like Fire Emblem.
Last year was it Fire Emblem? So that was the one.
Yeah, I didn't get to play Ni No Kuni though. I still want to play that.
Yeah. How about you, Justin?
I went back to Skyrim. And I've been putting a lot of hours into that.
It's really good.
I decided, like a crazy person, I decided I'm going to get all the achievements.
Ooh.
So I'm deep in that rabbit hole.
I would say I would put that out as an HD or whatever next-gen thing to play again and do more with.
Just like a,
with carryover.
The definitive edition.
I mean, they released the HD texture pack on PC.
Are you doing it on PC?
Yeah, I'm playing on PC.
Oh, I bet that looks so good.
Well, I'm playing on a MacBook Pro. Booted into the
So I bet it looks
runs, it runs at about what the console version runs at, actually.
Thanks, guys. That's about all the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Justin. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address at gamescoop@ign.com. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop. And we're out. Still.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.